women, boys, and girls, pets and creatures of every make and model, fans of entertainment, shenanigans alike. Welcome back to Legends Podcast. I'm Beef.
I'm Wing.
And I'm Lobster. The North Atlantic Storm of October 1991, nicknamed the Perfect Storm, was a meteorological Frankenstein caused by the convergence of a hurricane and a nor'easter, which forced it onto New England and their maritime provinces of Canada by a ridge of high pressure. The storm directly caused 13 deaths, over 200 million in damage, and resulted in 100-foot waves off the coast of Nova Scotia. The events of the storm were chronicled in Sebastian Younger's 1997 book, The Perfect Storm, and got the big screen treatment in Wolfgang Peterson's 2000 film of the same name, starring a stacked cast, including George Clooney, Mark Wahlberg, Diane Lane, John C. Reilly, William Fichtner, John Hawkes, Mary Elizabeth Mastrantonio, and Michael Ironside. The film focuses on the crew of the sword fishing boat Andrea Gale that went down during the storm with all hands lost. The big budget movie hauled in almost $330 million at the box office, but critics weren't hooked on it, with many arguing the film prioritized spectacle over soul. Now, 20 years later, does this fisherman flick about a nautical natural disaster still hold water? Gentlemen, you're steaming out the South Channel. The sun's rising. Big dumb ducks are on your bow. You're a goddamn sword boat captain. Is there anything better in the world?
I don't want to be a sword boat captain.
I don't want to spend 20 days at sea with freaking just cigarettes and BO. Yep. Like, I mean, I'm not a
smelling
fan.
Dead fish, and every once in a while, things get exciting where the goddamn shark almost bites your freaking leg off.
Yeah, that's the kind of excitement I'm not looking for.
Actually, let's go to that. All right, let's go to the shark. Why I don't like this movie.
What?
It's long as fuck, and you could use like 30 minutes less of wave shots and
sure,
whatever.
Okay. But this plays the Titanic card, right?
Yes, it does.
We are fully halfway through the running time of the movie before there's a drop of rain, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
It's Ang Lee.
The thing that I don't like is that nobody knows what happened on this boat, right? Especially not after the fucking antenna broke.
And they don't know. That is a big part of the book too. So I actually have the book. It might be on the shelf above my head. I can't remember where I stashed it. But the book, the last part of the book is Younger making assumptions about what happened. Like he kind of goes through the scenarios of what could have gone wrong and what that would have been like.
I mean, you don't know if their fucking ice maker broke. You don't know if there's bad blood between these guys. You don't know if Wreck-It Ralph got hooked by a hook and went over the side of the boat.
Right, absolutely.
No, that's all spectacle. That's movie. You need to make this movie interesting somewhere.
I know, but it's just...
And they never found the boat either.
I feel cheated.
Like, their boats, their bodies. What's that?
I said, but I feel cheated.
If I think it I thought you said that's what she said?
No.
And I was like, what? She never found the boat? Okay.
What I'm saying is, like, if you forget that it happens for real, you're watching a movie, you're on your couch, does that work?
The music gets me. The music in this movie, which the guy who did the soundtrack stole some of the... I got to click on this article because I read that he stole some of the music from another movie that he did. Shit.
So he stole from himself. So it's not the end of the world. But for you, Beef, if I take away the fact that it's a real thing, would it be better for you?
Maybe, but I don't know. I mean, this... And that's not I don't know. I just don't think so. This movie never... This is like the second or third time I've seen it. It just doesn't really...
Doesn't play for you. Is it too melodramatic? Is it too like it forces the camaraderie that you're supposed to care for these guys?
Yeah, like, oh, well, he's the first one in the water, you know, like, I mean,
yeah. And basically it's Twister, right? Like
it
there
is
isn't
Twister.
A huge lot of character development there, and kind of the same thing here.
this movie reeks of the 90s. I think it's start of the 2000. Yeah. It's an Ang Lee movie where we had that wave of Asian director coming to try to do like American movie. So they were still rehashing that kind of formula. So uh-huh. on that, I'm giving that to you. Yes, I think the critic was right. There's more spectacle than it should
sure.
be. The ending, like I said, first drop of water, get there at the right time, I think, for you to get attached to all these people that yeah. are going to die. But then, yeah, it's that thing after that thing. I call uh-huh. that like a writer's room.
Because the plot demanded that things go wrong in this particular order. The distress call from Mary Elizabeth Mastrantonio, that didn't happen. I'm sure they had a memorial service at the end, but as it's sort of depicted in the film, it's very much like you're gonna cry watching it, even if you're not that emotionally invested, because it's heavy.
Yeah, it's definitely heavy, but it's underscored by the 15 minutes of banging on the outer mass trying to weld off a freaking thing.
That got a little crazy. Yeah,
I mean, he should have been in the drink three times.
Mission Impossible, yeah. the yard arm there.
I mean, I don't know. It's a long fucking movie, man.
It is a long thing for this movie, for me, is that, first of all, it made me discover Ang Lee, and I watched this movie.
Why do you keep saying Ang Lee? This has nothing to do with Ang Lee. This is Wolfgang Petersen, Swedish dude, right?
Yes, I don't know why. I always mix these two guys. I don't know why. Weird names that you mix, but yeah.
Wolfgang Petersen, I don't think you could get further northern hemisphere sort of.
Yep.
What is he? I think he's Dane, German. He is German.
No, that's it. He's a European.
He's a European, and of course, Ang Lee is
Asian.
There you go.
That's the guy who did Das Boot, just before I get more confused.
So he did Das Boot in 1981.
Okay, I'm not crazy. Okay.
And he did not return to the sea, so to speak, until this movie. He did a couple other disaster-type movies, like Outbreak, very prescient.
Loved
now
it.
So that Outbreak was 25 years ago. Scary. Right before this, he did Air Force One, which I think we can all agree is a good movie. Then he did The Perfect Storm, then Troy, and then the remake. So he went back to the sea for Poseidon, the remake of the Poseidon Adventure.
I've still never seen Troy.
2006. Troy is a fucking long movie, and there's like 8 funerals in that movie.
Troy is a mess.
Yeah, Troy is 163 minutes. Ooh. So strap yourself in, buddy.
Ooh, no, because you know me. No,
that's it. Wolfgang Petersen makes long movies, and it just hit me at the right moment.
I mean, he peaked Air Force One, right? Like that was fine. You're talking about Troy hit you at the right moment?
No, I'm talking about The Perfect Storm.
Oh, okay.
I love this movie. I love this movie. I see the mistakes by the ends and all that. Sure, but overall, that is in my book, a thoroughly entertaining movie that has character, which is rare. And that gives the perfect balance for me of spectacle and what I go get into yeah. these kinds of stories. So this movie just got me at the right time, opened my eyes, and opened my eyes to movies that were long.
Here's the thing. Love this cast. Absolutely.
Yeah, Saul Star.
Love this cast. But each character on the boat is a copy of the next one, with the exception of Alfred Pierre, the French guy or Jamaican guy, whatever he is. He's the one like lone person who's like is not sort of weighed down by the same baggage that everybody else is. I'm going to break it down for you, okay? So you have Billy Tyne, who is a sad sack, old salt, who, you know, lost the wife,
divorced,
lost the kids in the divorce. Yeah. Right, right. And now all he's got is his boat and his fishing career, and he's sucking at that at the moment, right? So he's kind of at the tail end of the fish, right? You've got Bobby,
shut up already.
Come on, Bobby.
Okay, you've got him, who's like George Clooney's character, but 15 years younger.
Yeah, he just hasn't had the two kids in the divorce yet.
He's well on his way. They established that. He is making stellar choices. I mean, Diane Lane, it's hard to argue, but like he's going to screw that up, and you even see it kind of happen a little bit, but... He's the young Billy Ty. He's going to end up, you got old salt in you. You got a little of the old salt. He would have ended up as the captain, you know, in the same situation. You've got John C. Reilly as Murph, who is also a sad sack divorcee.
Like swimming.
Who is feuding with the other sort of sad sack who's Sully, who you don't learn a lot about. I love William Fichtner as an actor, but... he's just there to kind of be the heel.
Worst accent of the bunch.
Okay. Yep. And then you've got Bugsy, who is basically all of them except he can't get laid.
Saul Star.
So he's also John Hawks, again, kills it in this movie, but he is literally the saddest sack of the bunch because he can't even get a relationship to screw up. Right, and he kind of gets a hint of it. So everybody on the boat, with the exception of Alfred Pierre, who seems well-adjusted, he's not bogged down by this baggage. He gets a girl, he screws her, he's happy. Sometimes he screws her and her sister. It's great. He's living his dream. But everybody else is sort of a sad sack, but in the same way.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely tracks.
But that's the part where, it comes from real characters, kind of. So.
Yeah.
Well, let's talk about Gloucester, Massachusetts, right? If there's a sad sack of a town. Like, again, I am not trying to shit on Mass and Gloucester and the whole deal. But I think that there are many sort of dovetailing metaphors in this sort of film. Again, this is like a blue-collar movie, and we don't do those a whole lot on the podcast, so it's interesting to kind of look at them and say, like, well, you know, this is a blue-collar occupation. These guys are going out there. They can't afford swordfish steaks, right? Even with the money that they make their side, you know, when they get paid at the end of a trip, they're not going out and eating swordfish steaks. They're sucking back Narragansetts at the bar, and that's pretty much it. So, like, class doesn't really get explored in here, other than you have the rich, privileged people who get rescued, and the fishermen do not. But
I think that's because their call went in first.
Right, exactly. They never like make a point of, got to save the rich white people from their sailboat, even though they make way dumber decisions than the fisher people.
Well, they could have not left during the storm.
Right. So there's that. They could have not gone to the Flemish Cap. They could have let the fish boiled and stayed where there was good weather and lived. There's a lot of what ifs, of course.
You know, living is kind of cool. I'm just saying.
Yeah, but you're a fisherman. You're like, that's their shit. That's what they do.
You're a goddamn sword boat captain.
I'm a goddamn sword boat captain. The nice thing, though, this movie does take a step at breaking the cycle, if you will, because none of them really had sons, and they were sons, so they were all that. And the one that did have a son, he asked his kid, do you want to be a fisherman? He's like, no. Just want to go on the boat.
Yeah.
That's fair.
Right.
Again, I love the cast here. I love the actresses that are in here. Mary Elizabeth Smith.
Okay.
Gotta take another pass at that one. So Mary Elizabeth Mastrantonio plays Linda Greenlaw, who is a real person. She's in this book. She has written a number of books herself, including 4 mystery novels. I want to say she was on, there was a reality TV show that she was featured in about like lobster fishing, and she's in mentioned heavily in The Secret Life of Lobsters, which is a book that I keep on my shelf, obviously, obvious reasons, right? Lobster. And she's actually better known as being a lobster fisher than a swordfish.
You're talking like Deadliest Catch type stuff?
I'm talking Deadliest Catch type. type stuff, but about lobster fishing.
That's what deadliest catch is, lobster, I think.
It is not. It's crab, goddammit.
Yeah, you're right. It's crab. You're right.
King
it's
crab. Crab.
Nope, you're right. I'm sorry.
Alaskan crab.
Don't.
I want to eat lobster.
What the face? Jesus.
I mean, buy me dinner first, right?
No, you can eat me first and then buy me dinner after. I'm not like that.
So I guess for me, the whole takeaway is this movie is based on a true story. Does it do justice, in your opinion, to, you know, if you were the families of these characters, would you sue the, oh wait, they did sue the movie studio. So I guess I answered that one.
Yes, I would.
I did like the fact that as soon as the movie opens, they're hauling a, quotey fingers here, fish off the boat, and it like bumps into something, and it totally is like wobble, 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 wobble. Wow.
So all of the fish were dead and or fake. Wolfgang Petersen apparently is an animal rights activist. So everything you see is not actual real fish. They are animatronic fishes and a shark.
Fishes.
And yep. A shark.
So he totally would have blown Marky Mark's leg off, right? When he pulled out the shotgun and
pretty sure their skulls aren't strong enough for a bird shot point blank range.
Yeah, to just go through its cartilage, right?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know.
I'm Canadian. I don't know.
Anyway, special effects.
Now those are fine special effects for the time. We do water better than that now, but
yeah.
I mean, you have to remember we saw that in, what, 2000? Some bullshit like that?
This came out in the year 2000.
That was fine.
I remember it being better when I first saw it and less impressive on rewatch. Although, I did watch it on my laptop. I felt kind of bad. I have, a DVD of it somewhere, but I was like, I'm just going to throw on my laptop.
Of course, but when I saw that in theater 20-some-odd years ago...
It was epic, right?
Yeah, that was...
It didn't look bad at all.
You felt the water.
Well,
I don't know about that, but it was definitely
like
there.
Maybe like a 4D showing where they have the water
they splash you.
The seats
vibrate back and forth. That would be kind of cool. But for 2 hours of the movie, what are you doing? You're smelling like BO in the bar, right?
As long as they give me whiskey, I'm fine.
Yeah, I mean, this is... It's so fucking long, man.
You're not getting over that one.
I'm not. It's long and like nothing really happens, and they try to set up this camaraderie, which is kind of forced, but kind of there. And
yeah,
I don't know. And Bobby,
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 Bobby, Bobby, Bobby. Bobby.
How many letters did you, Bobby?
Bobby,
Bobby. I hear you calling me,
Bobby. B-A-U-I, Bobby. I don't know.
Yeah, B-A-W-B-Y, I think. Bow, bow, bow.
The ice storm is Ang Lee.
Yes, the ice storm is Ang Lee. That's a very different movie, though. That's
been bugging me. Okay.
That's also a great movie.
Agreed.
You can hear me talk about the ice storm, I believe, on a long ago episode of Art House Legends.
That's where it goes,
remembering correctly.
Good, this movie's good.
That movie or this movie?
The Ice Storm.
The Perfect Storm.
Now we're watching The Perfect Storm.
Yeah.
This movie's fine, too. Okay, that's fun. Right. It's not like fucking Battleship. Oh, same director.
You know,
I like Battleship better than this.
I've been kind of pitching a... You know how we do Canuary?
Yes.
I've been pitching for a couple years now to do a nautical-themed Canuary... Where we do C movies, like they're so bad, they're not B movies, they're C movies. Get a SEAC. And do you think this would have gone better as like a Canuary type film? I think it's elevated by the quality of the direction, the cast, but I could see like Battleship for sure being in there.
Oh, that's a B
movie. I'm not rewatching that.
Yeah, I mean we're forcing him to rewatch Hot Tub Time Machine, so.
True,
no.
We are.
Yeah,
yes, we
like
are.
In 2 months.
In Cro-November.
Just watch the Cliff Notes on YouTube. No. We'll be fine.
Fucking bad movie.
10 years old. So this movie's 20 years old. Peak career. I mean, this is in sort of the peak of Clooney, the Clooney sans, he came off of ER. He was doing movies left and right.
The Mark peak Wahlberg. That was trying to recover from Batman. That was not his peak.
Yeah, see, I view Batman as a fluke for him. I see this movie, this period in his career, where he's starting to dial it in. He's got Out of Sight around this period. He's
agreed,
got
three, that's where he's coming he's got, back.
He's got Three Kings the year before in 1999.
God, that's
he's
good.
Going on to do the Oceans movies from here. And then he sort of ages into the Oscar period, I guess, of his work.
Yeah.
Well, what's you guys feeling about this? What else you got locked and loaded here?
Don't watch it on a laptop, for Christ's sake.
Yeah, that was a mistake on my part. I should have figured out how to get it up on the big screen. But at the same time, that allowed me to appreciate the dialogue, such as it is, and the score, because it was right in my ears.
So did you watch it on HBO Max, and that's why you had to watch it on the laptop, because it's not on your Fire Google thing?
I couldn't find it on streaming, so I watched it on another website.
Okay, fair enough.
So, but again, I know I own a copy of it somewhere.
Too lazy to go in the basement and get the DVD. I'm the same way half the time.
Yep.
Put them all in a case.
I think at one point they were watching Blade Runner on their TV. That was one of the VHS tapes that they had, maybe. But I don't know. I got nothing else.
You want to do this one? Because your accent's probably better than mine.
You know what? You're a goddamn sword boat movie. Is there anything better in the world?
Wing for the Perfect Storm. Are you going legendary?
The perfect film.
Legend of its time.
Storm of the century.
Cult legend.
Ocean 6.
Awesome.
A love song for Bobby Longliner.
Oh my God.
Entertaining.
Rogue Wave.
Mayable.
The Dullest Catch.
Forgettable.
Sea movie.
Abysmal.
Davy Jones's Locker.
Sword. Spring Breakers.
Ah, see? This was so good.
Spring Breakers D&D.
Swordfish.
I like Swordfish.
Yeah, but Swordfish people hated sucks. That movie. That got panned, dude.
It sucks.
I know, it's not good at all. And I don't like it just because of Halle Berry's boobies either.
You do.
No, I don't. I like the old greasy...
he liked John Travolta's boobies.
I liked
boobies.
The old John Travolta boobies. With a side of nostalgia, guilty pleasure, tingle, barf, tears.
With a side of shark!
Shark!
I'm going to give this a very solid entertaining. Maybe it's not awesome, but it's a good movie. This is a good watch. This is a good time. I think you should watch this. What are you waiting if you haven't seen it? Come on. And honestly, we were talking about the visual. We went a little bit over it, but it's fine. Yeah, that giant wave could look
better. It looks very beautiful, though, some of it, you know, for the time.
Practical effects, so much of it, I think, was they were throwing real water on top of them half the time.
Great. So, honestly, I'm thoroughly enjoyed this movie, so I'm going with a very, very solid entertaining.
On a sidebar, a person that plays in the movie Extraction on Netflix is like the Indian version of John Travolta from Swordfish.
You've mentioned this in the past. Yep, I can't decide if there's... Like, is that problematic to just say that?
I'm
not sure.
Probably.
But I haven't watched Extraction, so I don't know.
Probably.
But,
but
you're saying he's the Indian John Travolta, right?
He looks like John Travolta in that movie. Long hair, a little thicker in the face, got some swagger, still can kick ass with some kung fu.
Soul patch, am I remembering this correctly?
I think this dude might. If he doesn't, it could fit in right there. Anyways, for the Perfect Storm, I have to go The Dullest Catch. This is solidly mayable in my book. Some of the camaraderie's fine. Some of it's fun. Bobby's name being Bobby, Bobbied all over, gets really fucking annoying.
It's Bobby.
The
come on, Bobby.
Accents are horrible.
You get the better, Bobby.
They make everybody say one or two lines in their accent, and they're like, ah, fuck it after
then
that.
Then they forget. Yeah. Clooney's goes in and out a lot.
I thought he wasn't even supposed to have one. I thought he just was a transplant from, like, Arizona or something.
Yeah.
I've seen this movie one or two other times. There really is no clear and present danger. We know these people are going to die, which is horrible. But then my mind gets caught up on, well, how do they know any of this shit happened? I know it's written for movie's sake, but it just, ugh. I was looking at my phone more than I should have, but less than I knew I could. So I did okay. So I got to go the dullest catch on this one. Lobster.
Yeah, I am 99% sure. Oh, shark! watch your feet.
Right, and your dingus. Jesus.
I am 90% sure I read Sebastian Younger's book. I think I bought it at like a yard sale or a library sale, something like that, on paperback. I'm pretty sure I read the book before I saw the movie. And the book goes into so much detail about fishing and the industry and weather. I really nerded out with that. I really liked his book because he's got this Sebastian Younger, if you're not familiar with his career, he was sort of one of the first journalists to be like the embedded journalist, and he went in like the Iraq War, the first Gulf War, and like went overseas to Kosovo or whatever, and was like embedded with the troops and things like that, and then wrote about it. Those are kind of his credentials. So he's kind of like a hard-bitten, grizzled journalist, and then he did this book that's about this weather event, right? And I remember vaguely when I was a kid, so 1991, I would have been 7 or 8 years old, something like that. And I remember this storm because even though we were pretty far inland in Western New York, I remember sort of the effects. Wing, you might have too when you were younger. Like, you might remember this storm because it was a big deal. They called it the storm of the century when it happened. So I always felt kind of an affinity for this story. The movie, on rewatching it, I don't think it holds up in terms of making me absolutely care for these characters. But then I've kind of got in the back of my mind, yo, these are real people. These are supposed to represent the real people. I don't know if this movie nails its sort of like closing shot of the names of the real men up on the wall. And I'm like, ah, man, I don't know if this booked it. But again, they can be in the church singing that song. And I'm like, all right, this does do a decent enough job. I'm going to give this one a rogue wave. It's kind of like it, you're not with it, and then it kind of hits you. It's kind of like that. You're kind of bored maybe the first hour or so of the movie.
I did get the feels towards the end.
I don't necessarily know if the kind of side quest with the Coast Guard, we didn't really talk about that. I don't know if that really plays in kind of the melodrama there. Yeah, it did feel a little like padding. But again, the book kind of does that. They're tracking kind of the other effects of the storm. But then they go into the Andrea Gale. So again, rogue wave for me, entertaining. I do have kind of maybe a side of nostalgia or guilty pleasure with this. And shark.
Last word of the perfect storm.
Shark.
Blobby.
Splish splash.
Oof.
Okay, so I'm out of here. I gotta go back to work. But Beef, what time is it?
Noise time.
Bye, Wing.
Bye-bye, Wing.
All right, so box office. Not a lot to talk about here. Tenet, still number one. The rest of the top three or four movies really haven't changed. Yeah, so that's kind of the other thing. So Tenet is not releasing solid box office numbers. They're still just releasing estimates, and they're not sharing sort of the daily, or I didn't realize this. Well, I guess I kind of did, but movie studios and theaters are supposed to share hour by hour box office receipts to like show how a movie is performing on like a Tuesday at 3 p.m. versus say a Saturday at 7 o'clock at night. So that they're not releasing that data either. That is kind of pissing off other studios. and the movie theaters that have taken the risk of opening back up just so they can show Tenet aren't really making a lot, and basically they're operating at a loss to really show this one movie.
That's horrible.
So all of that being said, Tenet is still number one. It held up to a 29% drop in its second weekend, despite the fact that it added 100 more screens. Plus, it is apparently showing at drive-ins now. Originally, Warner Brothers said they weren't going to allow drive-in showings, but those seem to have kind of crept in there, and I think they're just letting it go. So,
well, we kind of knew that would happen, though, right? The drive-ins,
yeah, I mean,
and stuff.
That seems to be sort of the safest and honestly most popular way to see a movie right now. So it's not surprising that they're going to try to get it on any screen they can, mm-hmm. even if it's not really their preference to do it that way.
Money's money, I guess, at this point in time. I'm just hoping that once they bite the bullet and they release it at home, shit, when they release it at home, I might just go buy a projector.
Well, so one of the things that we'll have to kind of reckon with, and we'll get a little bit into this in our news story, is Tenet may be without competition for a while. So they are probably not really going to be incentivized to release it early on home video. They may want to just take advantage until it really has competition. And by that, I think it's going to be number one at the box office for at least another month or so, because there's nothing else coming
right,
out
and everything's
to
getting
compete
pushed.
With it. Yeah. Well, so we'll come back to that with some more details. Flop alert. This is really interesting. So Mulan, originally when Disney made the decision to put it online on Disney Plus, they were still going to go with theatrical releases overseas. China, in particular, being the big market that they wanted to hold out for. And I think when they originally envisioned this movie, they had envisioned it as a bigger hit in China than it would be in the U.S. That has not been the case. It only made $23 million in its opening weekend in China. So, not a great success there.
I mean, maybe we got to readjust our numbers game. I mean,
yeah. So that is absolutely something to think about.
Expectations,
I don't think
maybe?
we are not going to get back to those sort of 50 plus openers, even triple digits. I don't think we're going to see 100 million openers in our lifetime. I don't know.
It's going to be a couple of years, I think. Even
it'll be, yeah.
Even if a vaccine comes out, say January of next year,
again,
people are still going to be leery of going
right,
and sitting around
right.
other people
and even,
eating and breathing.
Sure. And even Anthony Fauci, Dr. Fauci, who's kind of the leading sort of government scientist on this, has said, like, expect to wear a mask at the theaters until 2022 or
right.
whatever. So the other thing with Tenet, I didn't mention this, was that first weekend of box office numbers that we reported was actually like the first week. So they opened on a Tuesday and did several days of previews.
And then they had the Monday holiday.
Yeah, and then the Monday holiday. So that they counted all of that in their opening weekend, basically 6 days of box office.
So, and if you are previous listeners, you will know that I was all nerd boner over the number because it was close to a palindrome. Well, clearly it wasn't close to any of that because
right.
lies.
Absolutely, yeah. So we're going to dig into our top five news stories of this week. I will take the first one, if that's okay with you, Beef.
No.
Oh, you want to do this one?
No. That's good. I'll. Yeah, we're good.
Okay. So the first story, number five, that we'll talk about is Netflix spending $30 million for the rights to the movie Malcolm and Marie, starring John David Washington and Zendaya, which was a lockdown shot drama. And this was kind of a festival favorite, and there was a promotional showing of it, and then Netflix bought the rights for it. That's big money. I feel like when we're talking about a movie that's not even making that in its first opening in the theater, and you're paying that for a movie on Netflix, I don't know.
They always give good money for their movies, though. You know,
they do.
I mean, not great, but this is still not bad. And
they will stay in the catalog. It'll be the exclusive, and they will hold on to the rights forever. And yeah.
Yeah. I mean, this is, why not? Netflix needs new stuff too.
And so the next story is yours, but it's kind of a big one if you need help kind of breaking it down.
Well, you can feel free to tear it apart with me, but so many things now. I mean, let's just say everything on the slate has either been pushed or bumped or unexpectedly delayed.
Right. So there's that phrase again, canary in the coal mine. Tenant has been instructive for Warner Brothers and other studios looking at what are they going to do about other releases this year.
I mean, this screws everything up for a lot of things like Black Widow, you know, new release date. Wonder Woman pushes itself to Christmas, but really, is that going to happen? I doubt it. I mean, more and more things keep coming out on Disney Plus, just like Mulan. Soul now is most likely going
to
move.
Soul may move to Disney Plus, which is the next Pixar release.
And right after they were the greatest of great prick teases with a beautiful trailer, they're expected to delay the theatrical release of Dune.
Yeah.
So, yay, beautiful trailer.
Candyman will also be pushed to 2021. Again, it's not that theaters can't open. Tenet is proving that it is possible to open some theaters in some areas. It's just when you have these big budget movies, you can't sustain that. You can't say, well, we're going to open, but we may only make $90 million on our opening weekend or less. Like, I don't even see how some of these movies get to
crazy.
Right. Crazy big numbers. So again, you're looking at movies that need to make $500 million to break even, and there's just no path forward to that.
You know, walk with me here. It's a tiny journey, but they
I will.
A lot of these studios may have to lose a chunk of money on all these movies in the slate. You know, like Black Widow. If that doesn't come out, then your two or three Disney Plus Marvel shows don't come out. That pushes all the other stuff back. They may have to lose chunks of money on some of these big things and release them however they can, video on demand, whatever it is. And then maybe we see production size and budget of movies get rolled back 50% in the coming years.
Again, there's so many implications to kind of unpack here. I think one of the key takeaways, at least for me, is you're not going to see another big budget release.
Not this year. No.
I don't see Bond coming out this year. I know that's one that we have that has been pushed around a lot, but I think they really need that one to be a big performer because they owe Daniel Craig the money that they promised him to come back and do one more.
Maybe we'd see Black Widow. Like, maybe they're just like, screw it, we got to get it out.
So that is kind of the one that I think could go either way. I do think that the Marvel movies have the draw, but there's also the kind of like, it's a prequel / interquel. It doesn't feel as essential to the ongoing story. It's not an Avengers title. I don't know how integral it is to kind of the over arc of the new, what is it, phase 4? So that one's hard for me to guess. Dune has to make a lot of money. They spent a lot of money on that.
Did they film the second one with it already or no?
What, Dune?
Yeah.
I don't know exactly how that played out. So
you know, because
And the other thing kind of is, that's the other consideration. So movies are being very slow to get back into production. So the longer you hold what you have, if you were to play it all now, then you've got nothing in 8 months to show.
Right.
So they kind of have to, as production gets pushed back, they also have to push back some of their releases to sort of make sure they have enough to show. Yeah, go ahead.
We may never see the other half of this Dune if it wasn't shot right now.
That is a distinct possibility. I don't want to think about it, but
I just did, and it's in there, and it scares me.
And it's in your head for sure. So, in the streaming world, some changes.
Again?
So, the new thing seems to be to put plus on the name. So,
oh my God, hold on. Did you watch The Boys? The newest episode?
I did. I did watch The Boys.
Did you notice
that is available on Vought Plus?
Yes. Okay, thank you. Because they threw that out there like, come on, we'll give you a new series on Vought Plus. And I'm like, oh, yeah. They really are going the mouse in the house.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, go on, sorry.
So CBS All Access will rebrand as Paramount Plus. So this is like really interesting because I have argued that HBO Max is a bad title for that service. They should really call it Warner Max because it's bringing more to the table than just HBO content.
Correct.
It's got that back catalog of Warner Brothers and all of the sort of associated Turner Classic movies.
This describes it to you.
Cartoon Network and everything, right? And that's exactly what CBS All Access is going to do with Paramount Plus. Viacom is bringing on the Comedy Central brand, MTV, Nickelodeon, BET, in addition to the CBS All Access content, and bringing not just Star Trek Discovery and stuff, but developing new things like a scripted limited series about the making of The Godfather. I mean, cool stuff, right?
I won't get this.
No,
but this
me neither.
But this is way closer to something that I would get than just CBS.
CBS All Access.
Right. Yeah. I mean, that's like you're saying, at least HBO Max, I took the time to look at all of the other many features that it offers. But with CBS, I knew I was basically getting...
you wanted Star Trek Discovery, Picard, and Lower Decks, right?
Right, but other than that, what are you getting? It's like the crime scene, CSI, and CIS channel.
And that is that, again, we'll come back to, so there's another streaming service that's going to die and get folded into an existing streaming service. Anyway.
That's so fucked up.
Streaming is a thing.
Streaming is a fluid endeavor.
I think this is a smart move for them. I am much, like if I were going to pay for another streaming service, I would be more likely to pay for a Paramount Plus than a CBS All Access. I don't know why.
Yes.
The brand just sits a little bit better with me. I linked to this page where they go in to how they designed the logo, which is really kind of interesting. So one of the classes I'm teaching is kind of an innovation, marketing, and entrepreneurship course. And we're actually doing a unit right now on logo design and how like famous logos have been designed. So I'm going to show them this webpage and say like, oh, like here's this current event. And it kind of breaks down how they did it. Star-studded, forward-looking, approachable, inspired, unified.
Neat.
Yep.
All right. So... my homie.
All you cool cats and kittens.
Right. Hey, all you cool cats and kittens. Hollywood Reporter reports that Amazon is the lucky winner of the Nicolas Cage-led Joe Exotic drama, the one of two scripted series based on the 2019 breakout, blah, blah, blah. So this is going to be interesting. I want to see Cage play this in full, like, maybe not full, but like two-thirds Mandy. Just...
yeah,
out there,
okay.
You know, go with it. Long mullet.
Right.
I hope it's really his hair.
Talking about his dick piercing.
Yeah, I mean, I'm ready for this because it's Joe Exotic and it's this year's hot thing is next year's blah thing. So why not?
Yeah. That's true. Will the pandemic, the quarantine last long enough for us to, I don't know.
No, it'll like, fire back
to
off
that to be
next
like the
year.
Next, yeah. Get the next mutation of it.
Mm-hmm.
So, number one story, and Beef will understand why I bumped this to our number one story. Jonathan Majors, who kills it in Lovecraft Country, talked about him last week in Defy Bloods. He is joining the MCU, the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
Easily one of my man crushes right now.
Very good. His shoulders, his arms, like his...
he
whole,
is a
like,
brick shithouse.
Yeah.
I don't know what he ate or drank between Lovecraft or between Defy Bloods and Lovecraft Country or vice versa, but...
sure. I don't know what that muscle is where your sort of bicep and your shoulder meet and you end up like with this divot in there. I'm pretty sure I don't have that muscle, but he definitely does, and it's very pronounced and captivating.
Like I said, him and Letty I'm in love with.
Yeah. He will be Kang the Conqueror.
Is that confirmed that he's going to be Kang?
It is confirmed he's going to play Kang. At least as far as everything I've read, this article says the studio had no comment, but sources close to the project say he's likely to play the supervillain Kang the Conqueror.
Okay.
This is from Deadline. So, again, Kang the Conqueror is kind of envisioned as the next big bad for the Phase 4 of Marvel. Kang the Conqueror has an awesome backstory tying into all sorts of different stuff. As well as
that'd be a big get for him.
Being kind of like this uber threat. So he could be the next Thanos. The fact that they're introducing him in the next Ant-Man movie, which we don't know a lot about other than they're saying that the Wasp will have equal billing. Yep. And so that should be the next Ant-Man and the Wasp movie. Thank you very much.
Yeah.
But again, kind of a cool thing. I'd like to think that he will be in not just this, but sort of introduced in a cool way and then an ongoing threat.
Yeah, that'd be cool to see because, like I said, the last few things I had never even heard of him or seen him in anything until Lovecraft Country, and I liked him in there, saw him in The Five Bloods, and Lovecraft Country just keeps getting better and better. So, sure, give him a shot.
And again, I don't want to put any spoilers out there, but if you want to research the fictional backstory of Kang the Conqueror, there are some very interesting tie-ins to existing Marvel characters. So,
quick hits, honorable mentions, and dishonorable mentions.
Yeah, let's run through these real fast.
Of course, we knew Watchmen was going to kick ass everywhere, and it did in the TV Critics Awards.
Yep.
Apparently, it like took everything or was mentioned for everything.
Yeah, so it did very well. I believe these are nominations. I didn't actually read this article.
Neither did I.
No, it won the awards. It swept. The ceremony was presented virtually, and it got a bunch of awards. Watchmen, very good.
Yeah, I need to. So, every time I see it, I'm like, I need to go back and watch that. And then I come home and I like forget.
Yeah, you do other stuff.
Carol Baskin's...
Hey, all you cool cats and kittens.
Hey, all you cool cats and kittens. Carol Baskin's missing husband, you know, the first one that she probably killed.
Fed to the tigers.
Their family bought a commercial for her thing during Dancing with the Stars.
Well, so like a missing persons type thing. Like
if you
Carol
know
Baskin
anything.
Killed her. Doom Patrol has been renewed for season 3 on HBO Max, so not on DC Universe. Bye-bye, whatever that.
I'm excited. First season was good. Second season started out slow, ended better. So, whatever. We'll see about the third one.
Okay.
What about you? Have you tried that or no?
I have not. I have yet to commit to the Doom Patrol. I'd like a better solution to watch HBO Max on the TV so I can share it with
buy
my
you
wife.
A knockoff Japanese dongle and program it.
And HBO Max is ordering a period comedy, Our Flag Means Death, from Taika Waititi, about pirates.
Okay, see, that sounds fun. Pirates and flags
I'm
of death
excited
and
for this.
Skull and crossbones. And
it's I envision it being like What We Do in the Shadows, but with pirates.
Right.
I am so excited for that.
Pringles launches two more Rick and Morty flavored Pickle Rick.
Pickle Rick is coming back.
Yeah, Pickle Rick style
and
chips,
they're
if you
gonna
will.
Have.
The two new ones are going to be. Oh, shit, I can never catch where it is. Look at me, I'm cheddar and sour cream. Mm-hmm. And that's
Mr. Meeseeks.
Mr. Meeseeks. And then the other one is Honey Mustard Morty.
Hey, look at me.
Yeah, I need a few for my collection, and I want some to eat. I have not found them in stores yet.
Yeah, if they did a Mr. Poopy Butthole flavor, spicy barbecue.
Right, or what is the Fritos one? Just the regular chili cheese Fritos.
Oh, yeah, gross. And lastly, some sad news. Dame Diana Rigg passed away, age 82. You would recognize her as Lady Olenna Tyrell on Game of Thrones.
I want Cersei to know it was me.
I want Cersei to know it was me. Emma Peel on the original British show, The Avengers. And, of course, the only woman to ever marry James Bond in On Her Majesty's Secret Service.
I looked at a couple of her younger pictures because they said she was a fashion and sex icon. And she was definitely an attractive woman. She certainly
was, I'd say, up until she died.
But her like face and nose structure was just so similar, obviously, because it was her. But yeah, there were some looks where I'm like, oh, my God, that's Lady Elena or whatever. You could see it even at 22.
We were rewatching Extras, which is the Ricky Gervais show that he did right after The Office.
Okay.
And she guest stars in an episode with Daniel Radcliffe playing Harry the guy who played Harry Potter, when he was much younger, and he flings a condom onto Diana Rigg, and she makes him ask for it back, and he says, "Can I have my Johnny back?" And she says, "Can I have my Johnny back, please?" very, very funny. Sad to see her go, but what a career. Shall we dump some trailers?
Let's do that.
So we got one TV show trailer to talk about, but it's a good one. The Mandalorian Season 2 coming to Disney Plus on October 30th.
It's been a year since we got the last one.
It has been a year. Yeah. Remember, they put them out a week at a time, which is kind of fun.
I like that. I like the three right away and then a week at a time or whatever. I'm okay with it because it gives you more time to talk about it and enjoy it.
We don't get a ton of big reveals in this trailer, although maybe he gets a jetpack, which is pretty cool, because he said, I got to get me one of those. And
we're going to see some Jedi?
We may see some Jedi, and I love the Baby Yoda moments in this one, where Baby Yoda puts his shields up, and he's like, okay, I know what's about to happen here.
Yeah, right. They get threatened, and then the Mandalorian pulls out his Whistling Dixie or whatever, where it just shoots everybody in the place.
And I think the alien that he kills at the end is a Darth Maul species alien. I forget what they're called, just without the tattoos.
Yeah, okay.
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 Some movies you can watch at home. So speaking of CBS All Access, which will be rebranded Paramount next year. Plus. Console Wars, about the battle of Nintendo and Sega.
This looks really good. If you have any interest in this and you have Netflix, go watch High Score right now.
High Score, right.
High Score was amazing, and this is right in the same feels button, so why not? It's like that, you know, back, left, right, up, you know, whatever. Yeah.
Okay. A biographical documentary coming to HBO, Siempre Luis.
I was confused by this, but it's, isn't this...
You could say Hamilton's dad.
Thank you, Hamilton's father.
Yeah, so this is Luis Miranda, Lin-Manuel Miranda's father, who's a big activist and proponent, advocate for Puerto Rico. So it kind of goes into the effects of Hurricane Maria and also sort of his health struggles. He had a heart attack and then kind of like what it is, what he's all about. And of course, it's Lin-Manuel Miranda, you know, saying his dad's a real bad motherfucker. So that
it looks interesting.
Cool. Yeah.
The next one, Sneakerheads on Netflix.
So wait. Uncut Gems, but Shoes.
Yeah, but I would have no interest in this. I still have no interest in this, but a touch because my friend like at work. No, not really. But my buddy at work just moved from the warehouse to Upfront, so now he's like got some disposable cash, and he has become a sneakerhead. He's got like six pair of Jordans, and he's always talking about this new one that he's going to pick up and how much he can trade it to a guy for and then what the shoe he's going to get is worth. For. It's like it is literally this, and I hear it once a week from my buddy at work. So it'll be interesting.
Yeah. I mean, I am a Reebok fan myself, so I'm all about the box. But I can appreciate it.
Heck yeah.
Speaking of Uncut Gems, Adam Sandler is back to doing shitty comedy movies with Hubie Halloween coming to Netflix in October.
I have no interest in this. This feels like they're mocking him, right? And it feels like Adam Sandler's...
He looks like the character from The Waterboy, yes, right? Just like he's basically... 40
or 50.
Right, and a creepy old man.
Yeah, hunched over, talks kind of with an impediment or whatever.
Something's wrong with your medulla. Blah,
right, blah, blah. Exactly. It just, it doesn't... There's no new jokes now. Now we're just doing The Waterboy 30 years later.
Fights vampires.
Right, at Halloween, right? This is, you know what this is? This is Ernest Scared Stupid.
Yeah, I think it is his Ernest Scared Stupid. And that's okay. I mean, that was a good Ernest movie. But
thank you for liking Ernest.
Yeah, I do like Ernest. Jim Varney's amazing. He's a legend. Or was a legend. May he rest in peace. So the trial of the Chicago 7, this is the big Aaron Sorkin written and directed by...
I can hear Wings erection story. From here.
Yeah, and this looks like that movie.
I mean, if there's
have you
buzz,
ever been put on trial? Have you ever been put on trial for your thoughts before? I mean, thank God, right?
Like, I'm sure I was once.
This is... I don't take much away from the trailer,
no.
But I think this is going to be kind of a buzzy type thing.
Yeah, we'll have to hear how it is, and then I'm sure we'll watch it. If it's a Sorkin thing, like I said, I can hear Wings erection.
Yeah, sure.
Three
states and two provinces away.
Yeah, a couple lakes, too. There's a couple hundred miles of lake. 2067, video on demand in theaters. This is what the hell? This is the time travel.
It's time travel. So this is there's a virus in the future, very timely.
Where do we know
so
this kid? There's a virus.
Well, this is the kid who grew up as he was a child actor, Cody Smith McPhee. He had done a bunch of roles as a kid. Most recently, probably you saw him as Nightcrawler.
Yep.
In the X-Men more recent
was
films.
Was he in one of those Maze Runners maybe too?
It's a good chance. I don't actually know off the top of my head, but I don't doubt it. I don't doubt it. And so the idea is that in the future, a time machine is built. And I don't know exactly how it's built, maybe with like instructions sent back. And then they get a message that he is supposed to be sent through the time machine to supposedly he's the key to curing whatever is wrong with the world. And then it goes from there and looks super trippy.
I'm interested in this because, you know, me and post-apocalyptic shit. But
yeah, it's post-apocalypse. I'm into it because it's time travel. Yeah,
time travel as well for me. And then it's kind of like got a 12 Monkeys vibe with the time travel and the world dead. And I don't know. Right, it's like the reverse of 12 Monkeys.
I'm hoping it's good. Maybe I'll work it into my class next year. We'll see.
Oh, look at you. I like it.
Oh, thinking ahead. Okay. We all know the Freaky Friday body swapping trope.
Didn't even understand that's where the name of the movie came from until halfway through the trailer. I'm like, oh. Okay.
Right. So we all know the young person swaps bodies with the old person and learns an important life lesson and vice versa. This is from Freaky from Universal and Blumhouse coming Friday the 13th of November. It is Vince Vaughn and a teenage girl swapping bodies, except one of them is a serial killer.
This looks pretty lame.
Yeah, but Stephen King apparently said that Vince Vaughn should get an Oscar nomination.
Shut the fuck up.
Nope.
So, did Stephen King fall and hit his head?
I don't know. I mean, he often posts controversial things, but...
No, I'm not going to see this in a theater, for sure. I'll rent it. Maybe I'll rent it.
All right.
What about you? Is this something that you're going to rush out and see?
Right. So I actually kind of enjoy those movies. So this one I liked for that sort of value of it. And I do like some of those weird, like we were this close this weekend. We were this close to watching The Binge, which also has Vince Vaughn in it, but is like a teen comedy. It's that one where it's The Purge, but with drinking.
Okay. That one I did want to see.
Okay. We almost watched it this weekend and we ended up watching something else instead, which I'll talk about. But, so I'm kind of into this. The next trailer I absolutely loved. It's called Save Yourselves. It's about a couple who decide they want to get away from the world.
Just have to unplug.
they just have to unplug. They're going to go out into the country, stay at their friend's dad's cabin, and ignore social media and everything, just disconnect. And that's when giant tribbles basically take over the planet. Poof.
Yeah, and
poofs.
At first, before that, they're like, oh, God, all I can do is think of things to Google. Or he says something like, I just want to Google something.
Yeah, I just want to Google how to make a rabbit trap.
Right, like all this shit that nowadays you do, you're all fidgety.
And they're like, we have no survival skills.
Yeah, but basically large tribbles that just show up everywhere. And again,
there's a poof. There's a poof on the roof.
This is probably one of my favorite trailers of the week.
Yeah, I would, I teach a time travel class. A friend of mine does a class on the apocalypse. So I immediately sent him this trailer. And I was like, dude, this is exactly what your class is about.
Dude, why can't I come? I'm going back to school. I'm just going to go to like you and a couple of your friends' classes that have cool classes. Right.
Absolutely. So he does, it's called Apocalypse Now. They do Walking Dead. They do Children of Men, The Road, and Last Man on Earth, the comedy.
Oh, The Road, Children of Men. Yep. Oh, talk about dick punches.
Yep. All right. So, video game trailer. We don't do this often, but I wanted to highlight the Scott Pilgrim versus the World, the game, the 10th anniversary complete edition coming to Nintendo Switch this holiday season.
This felt very OG, like original Nintendo.
It's a beat 'em up, side scrolling,
right? Like Dungeons and Dragons, or not Dungeons.
Streets of Rage. Yeah. Definitely awesome looking. I found another article which was like, if you don't want to wait for this, here's a bunch of other side-scrolling beat-em-ups you can play. A bunch of them available on Steam. I might check those out.
Nice, nice.
Okay, real quick, spoiler-free reviews. What have we read, seen, and or played recently?
I did not get a chance to watch Lower Decks this week, so I am one behind. I don't know. We're probably catching up at a fast rate. Lovecraft Country, again, I love this show. I love the interpersonal relationships. I love Atticus. I love Letty. This last episode with her sister, whose name I'm blanking on now.
Oh, but I love her too.
Yeah, and someone pointed this out in a forum, what happened, spoiler free. And I was like, nah, that can't be. And then the whole episode, I'm like, they're setting it up. That's exactly what's going to happen. And it did. So, weird. The Boys, so much fun. And the twist that happened when he went and saw someone that was,
twists happen.
Yeah, it was very good. Raised by Wolves, they gave us two episodes this last week on Thursday. Ooh. So that, again, is weird and fucked up, and it's got so many conflicting ideas from atheism to religion to AI or people raising kids to survival, all this weird shit. It's well worth your time. Criminal comes out tomorrow, the second season, so I will be on that. Archer. I was bored, and I flipped on my Hulu account.
Ooh,
and
okay.
I realized I stopped somewhere about where he got shot and went into the pool. And then you were right.
And then everything is
Danger Zone. Theme. And it's
Danger Island,
and
Noir Dreamland,
And Dreamland, and then space or
in space,
So I didn't want to see enough of, or I've seen enough of the one-off detective ones. I'm sure I'll go back and watch those three seasons, but I started the Space 1999 one.
So good!
Oh my God, it is one of the
best. If you like Lower Decks,
and it's all right, like the fucking Alien and Terminator tropes and all this crap that we know. So, highly recommend Archer. I think it's season 10. And then I wasn't gonna watch it before the cast because I wanted a nap. But then I remembered.
But I made you drool.
I remembered the picture that Lobster had sent me of a 203 day dry aged with extra fat on the ends beef rib on barbecue, or was it Chef's Table barbecue?
When Chef Table Barbecue, when he wipes it on the grill.
Oh my God.
And he's like, yeah, it really gets the fat. And then you just wipe. I'm like, oh, dude.
The way this guy cooks with fire is the way I can only hope to. Like, it's so amazing.
Yeah. And each one is different. So Chef's Table Barbecue. And, I'm going to have to go back and watch some of the other Chef's Table episodes, like the regular series. Yeah, and from what I've heard, they are. But just the drool factor alone, and barbecue being one of my favorite food groups, one, and then the next episode is Whole Hog Barbecue.
Oh, that'll be good.
And I'm just like, oh, okay.
I'm really excited for more of that. So, Sarah, what about you? What have you been watching?
Well, I caught up this weekend, Friday night, Saturday night, and Sunday night, just before bed. I watched an episode of Lower Decks.
Nice.
So I caught up on the three episodes I was behind on. Loved it. I wish I could watch an episode every night before bed because it's so pure and wholesome and also kind of raunchy and fun. So I think that is fun. Lovecraft Country, I wish we could do spoilers. We'll have to talk off the cast about WTF happened in that last episode.
Don't forget about that.
I have theories. I was doing the dishes. We watched the episode this evening, then I did the dinner dishes, and I kept stopping to ask my wife to Google stuff. Like, wait, what are those characters' initials? Is that what that means? What about this other thing? Is that what that means? I did, in fact, watch The Boys, Chef's Table Barbecue, as we said. On Hulu, we watched Woke.
How was it?
We watched all eight episodes of the first season of Woke. Hopefully the first of many. It's exactly kind of what we thought it would be. So we compared it to Sorry to Bother You, the TV show. And that's pretty much what you end up getting. So it goes from a basically encounter with the police, which is this like non-woke black cartoonist played by Lamorne Morris from New Girl, who goes on this sort of adventure, hearing talking garbage cans, to an escaped koala bear, and it's just so fascinating and fun and funny. Really great commentary. I hope they do more. Also, they definitely looped in a line about the coronavirus, because they're in one scene they're on a bus and you see a lady with a mask on. They're like, oh, she probably got coronavirus, but it's very clearly shot before the pandemic because of social gatherings.
Otherwise,
and things.
Everyone would have them on too.
Right. So really interesting. Also, clearly filmed before George Floyd, but holy shit, is it prescient? So Polis, I do want to mention a couple comics I'm looking forward to. Autumnal number 1 coming out next week from Vault Comics. I read a kind of synopsis of this. It's basically a beautiful afternoon in the fall, the pumpkin spice season, very basic, but the leaves have secrets. So kind of like a horror bent to that. Immortal She-Hulk. She-Hulk is getting her own title. Once again, that's coming from Marvel. Immortal She-Hulk number 1. So I ended up at the comic shop this week. I didn't have any cash. And this is how they get me, right? I love my comic shop, but they have a $10 minimum on the credit card. So what do I end up doing? I end up going to the back issue bins and basically what I do is I look for issues I had or I remembered when I was a kid. So when I was a kid in the summer of 1993, I bought a couple issues of Wolverine where he went to the Savage Land and fought dinosaurs. And yes, if you're doing the math, the summer of 1993 is when Jurassic Park, the movie, came out. And that was kind of their tie-in. They're like, oh, we'll do a Savage Land story and have Wolverine versus dinosaurs. It'll be great. So I bought a couple back issues, 69, 70, 71, of the classic Wolverine run.
I think that's awesome that you go back and look at the ones that you... I'm kind of doing the same thing with toys, because I had a bunch of old comic book and Spawn toys and things like that mm-hmm. got stolen from an old storage locker. So now I'll see them on eBay or whatnot, and I'll be like, oh, at least place a bid whether I get it or not.
Yes. Yeah, so eBay is kind of my nemesis at the moment. Since sort of the pandemic happened, I go down these wormholes where I'm like, oh, I remember that thing I used to own. So right now, okay, literally this minute, I'm stalking some eBay auctions of the McDonald's collectible glasses that they released as a tie-in to Batman Forever. So I had, when I was a kid, I had Robin and Two-Face. I did not have Batman or the Riddler, okay? Now, I don't think that the original glasses still exist at my parents' house. They may be in a box somewhere. I highly doubt it. I'm sure they got sold at a yard sale when I was in, like, eighth grade or something. But I've been stocking the Batman cup on eBay auctions.
Yeah, it's part of my OCD as well. And then once I get on it, I'm like, oh, my God.
Yep. Yeah, because now, and lose a bit, you will not lose another, because you're like, I'm not fucking losing
that again. Right, fucking $400, it's a $3 piece.
Yeah, right.
One other thing on your pull list. When you see the Wolverine, black, white, and red come out, or they're taking orders for it, please let me know.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. Have you read it, or is it upcoming?
It's upcoming, I believe. It's a special that they were going to come out with. We did news on it a couple weeks or a month ago or something. It was all black, white, and red.
So here's how I work. So I have a couple websites that I check. This has gotten harder since the pandemic for upcoming releases because it's not always consistent. And then I keep a checklist on my phone of what I'm walking in for that week.
Right.
And so right now I've been looking at things like Adventure Man, Conan, Marauders, the X-Men book, the Star Trek Deep Space Nine series I've been reading. There's another Spider-Man series starting in 2021, January, that's supposed to be, that looks good. So I will keep my eyes out for that Wolverine title.
Very cool, very cool. Well, sir.
Yeah, this was fun.
Yeah. Sorry, Wing had to go back to work, but we landed this jumbo jet.
And we know what he's working on, and it's worth it.
No, we don't. We don't know anything. Next time, Legends Podcast, Goon. What is this? Is this a horror movie? What are we?
No, so this is a hockey movie. This, I believe, is timed with the Stanley Cup Finals that are coming up.
Okay.
And Goon is a hockey movie made by hockey fans. I know we did a Canadian sport earlier this year when we did curling. Wing suggested this, I think, then when we talked about that curling episode with Men with Brooms. So this is Sean William Scott, you know, Stifler.
Mm-hmm.
And he plays a hockey enforcer for a pro-am league in Maritime Canada.
Okay, well...
Oh, you know what? I think it was Scott Pilgrim because Allison Pill, who plays Kim, is in it.
Okay.
Liv Schreiber, who plays
Sabretooth. I like him.
Sabretooth. And Ray Donovan? He's in it. Jay Baruchel's in it. So it'll be fun.
Cool.
Solid watch. Think it's on Netflix.
Have a comment, question, or recommendation? Email us at legendspodcasts@gmail.com with an extra S for goddamn sword boat captain.
That's right. Is there anything better?
This has been episode 490 of Legends Podcast. We are closing in on 500. Yeah.
Yeah. That is crazy to me that we are there. I know we've been kind of talking about it all year. I am so excited for the next 2 months of this podcast because we have Legends of Halloween.
Yep.
We have Chronovember. Yep. Our 500th episode is the last week of Chronovember, and we are hearkening back to the second or third ever episode of Legends Podcast. It will totally tie in. It's a journey, but you will walk with us.
I am Beef saying, hey, they potentially found life on Venus. This is not the life I was hoping for we'd find, but maybe we'll find more.
I mean, it's got to be better than staying on Earth, 2020.
Ooh, hashtag 2020, any responsible adult other than the two that are up for election.
Yeah. I mean, I would take certainly at least one of the adults up. I mean, not to get political or nothing, but seriously, register to vote, go vote, make the right choice, because if we can't take another 4 years of this.
We're all going to die.
Oh, my God.
Thank you for listening. If you'd like to leave us feedback, you can find us on Twitter and Facebook at Legends Podcast. You can also send us an email to legendspodcasts@gmail.com. That is podcast, plural. For all our contact information, as well as other shows, look to GunnaGeek.com. You can also visit LegendsPodcast.com, where you'll find our complete archives. The music heard on the show is Danger Storm by Kevin MacLeod and can be found at IncompuTech.com. The opinions on this podcast are those of each individual host and do not represent Legendstream Canada or GunnaGeek. No infringement is intended.